The current climate change narrative says that with massive action to eliminate carbon emissions, humans can prevent global disaster. But Illinois State University Associate Professor Catherine O'Reilly says some parts of the planet have already experienced 2 degrees of Celsius of warming, considered a tipping point for significant environmental change. As the trend continues around the globe, scientists predict rising sea levels, lower crop yields, more deadly heat waves, and other weather disasters. GLT News correspondent Brianna Groh spoke with O'Reilly after a climate change forum last week and asked, shouldn't we be preparing for the worst?
When we think about what we need to do moving forward, we do have to face the reality that this is not going to just disappear. That even if we start making a lot of progress on mitigation, we are still going to see warming. So we know, for example, that if we immediately went to no CO2 emissions right now, like we just said, next year we're just all in, and we somehow managed to completely do that, the technology is available, we would still see warming for several decades. And the reason for that is that these greenhouse gases are like blankets. So when you're cold, you put a blanket on you, you don't instantly suddenly feel warm, right? It takes a little while for that blanket to trap that heat, and then you start to feel warmer. So carbon and these other greenhouse gases are just like a blanket. We put a blanket on us, we don't feel that warmth right away. It takes a while to feel it. But we keep putting on more and more blankets because we're still feeling kind of cold. Then eventually you're just going to be crazy, crazy hot, right? Right now we have so many blankets on the earth that we are going to be feeling warm no matter what, even if we stop putting more of these greenhouse gas blankets on top of ourselves. So adaptation is something we're going to have to figure out how to do. And there are lots of examples around the world of cultures and communities and countries that have made strides towards improving their resilience to climate change. And hopefully in the United States, we're going to be able to do some of that as well.
So if that blanket is still going to be there and, you know, it's not going to come off right away or even for several generations, even with the most drastic actions, why does it feel like so much of our conversation is about reducing carbon emissions rather than saying, well, these changes are inevitable?
The changes have already happened and started to happen, and these changes are really well documented around the world. The focus on carbon emissions, the focus on what role do humans really have in climate change, is essentially a construct of the political discourse in the United States. If you go to other countries in the world, they are not having these same conversations. They have already moved ahead to a place where they are thinking about adaptation planning for the future. Several years ago, I was invited by the president of Mauritius to come attend a conference in Mauritius that focused on women in Africa. I do a lot of work in East Africa on water and climate. And it was astounding to me. There were all these women from Africa and parts of India, and their countries were moving ahead in technologies, changing agriculture, all of these things. And we were not even having a conversation about, is this about CO2 emissions? Is this about what people do? Should we drive different kind of cars? It was just like, here's what we're doing, you know, because we know that we need to change what we do. And here's some things that we're getting started on in our communities to make sure that we have robust agriculture and food security in the future.
And this makes me think of our current elected officials and the ability of future elected officials to actually enact change. We clearly don't have a consensus in our Congress or even in our presidential leadership about what is scientific fact, what we should be moving on. Do we need to wait or can we wait for there to be consensus or for those who deny climate change to come around?
We can move forward on these issues by ourselves. And whenever I kind of look at the political landscape and hear these, you know, conversations and that our politicians are having, especially sort of at the federal level, it's really easy to get disheartened and just feel like we are never going to move through this current barrier in this country and catch up with what a lot of the rest of the world is doing, frankly. We're losing out economically, we're losing out technologically on innovations that America could be leading on if we were able to just stop having the conversation and start doing stuff about this. When I get really disheartened about these things, I think about what America's done in the past. And so for the great examples of this are the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. Those were not federal initiatives. They came from people who were like, I am really sick of seeing this dirty water and not being able to let my kids swim. I am sick of having air quality that is not safe for me to be around. And those were issues the public like coalesced around, came together around, and really forced the issue all the way up to the federal level where laws were put in place so that our water quality has improved and our air quality has improved. And we can do the same thing with climate change. The challenge with climate is it's just a very complex issue. There's lots of different facets that contribute to it, but I think we can look at those earlier cleaner acts and clean water acts as models for success and use those to help and inspire us that we should keep pushing forward, because a lot of the changes that need to happen, they do need to come from top-down levels. We really, and businesses are on board, states are on board. We just need a little bit of extra push to get this through at the very upper level so that we can sort of have our clean, you know, sustainable climate and future.
So the answer is probably not waiting for the Green New Deal to be passed and then enacted. What is your level of confidence in those sweeping national initiatives?
One of the nice things about hearing national initiatives presented is it sort of illustrates that people are thinking about what we should be doing at the national level. People do have ideas. People do have plans. And like with everything, when new plans and ideas are presented, people are resistant. They have questions. They have concerns. And so the more people will bring up some of these issues, the faster we will, you know, check and make sure that some of these ideas are going to work, and the more likely we will be able to pass them. At the same time, we don't need to have federal level initiatives pass in order to make a lot of progress on the ground. There's lots of things that communities can do. For example, tonight we heard about the idea of the urban heat island effect, where if you have a lot of cement and parking lots and roadways, those store heat and they radiate that heat at night. We can resolve those issues or mitigate those just by using different types of concrete, planting more trees, making sure the trees that we plant are in places where they're going to get enough water to grow, planting tree species that are appropriate, that are going to be long-lasting and be able to handle the kinds of climate conditions we're going to get, planting other native plants that are going to be resilient, use less water, and take up CO2 and put it in the soil. So there are lots of things we can do on small scales if we come together and push for those in our towns and our city councils. And then, of course, at the state level. So there's things we can do. And honestly, the way things are going in the United States right now, these initiatives are for a cleaner, greener world are coming from out of states who are leading the charge and insisting that they want to stand by the kind of standards that they're presenting.
I'm Brianna Groh. I'm talking with Catherine O'Reilly. She is an associate professor of geology at Illinois State University and was a panelist at First United Methodist Church Conversation on Climate Change. This conversation tonight included a lot of stark conversation about the kinds of deaths and hardships that humans will be facing in the not-so-distant future. What about your research gives you hope about climate change and our ability to live through this?
I think one of the nice things that's happening as climate change discourse becomes a more common thing is people are really coming together, and the conversations that people are having are taking into account and consideration people who don't have access to the same kind of resources that many of the rest of us do. If you're a wealthy person, odds are climate change is just going to take a hit on your pocketbook, right? But there might be some lifestyle changes. You might not be outside as much, for example, but you're probably going to be able to pay your way through the economic hardships that we're going to incur. If you're someone who is an hourly laborer, for example, you're going to have a totally different scenario in front of you. And so some aspects of climate change are really going to contribute to increasing inequality. And so what's nice about these conversations is people aren't just talking about let's make the environment better. People are also talking about let's do this in ways where we take into account people's jobs and careers and make sure that they're going to have some social justice and reduce the likelihood of economic inequality as we move towards some of these cleaner environmental, you know, aspirations that we have.
As you have more conversations about climate change and reviewing research like that, those that the Union of Concerned Scientists have put out. What personal effects has that had on you? Has it motivated you to make personal changes, or how does it have you feeling?
Yeah, as a scientist who studies climate change and its effects, you know, I see everything to kind of what's happening here in Illinois, to also where I do a lot of work in East Africa, where there's going to be major issues with food security. It's really hard when one of the things for sure that's happened over the last few years is just this sudden acceleration of research. As we have more data, our models are better, and we're just much better able to show how fast things are changing. And things are changing so much faster than we had originally projected that they would. And the adaptation and mitigation strategies that are kind of going into place are happening much slower than we would have hoped. So that just kind of leads to this sort of doomsday type of scenario. So the things that I always think about are we do need leadership at the top. So we have to stay engaged in politics, both locally and, you know, encouraging our state and federal representatives to move forward on some of these issues. At a personal level, things that I have decided to do in my life include biking to work. I do that as much as I can, or walking. I have a car that's very old. It's a small car. I bought it a long time ago with the anticipation that when I bought my next car, I would be able to buy an environmentally sustainable vehicle. And I don't feel like I can do that yet. And so until I do that, I will keep using this older vehicle. Its emissions are fine. There's no reason to just toss it if it's still running perfectly fine. I also work on buying sustainable clothing. So I'm trying not to consume just in general, but I've made a specific effort to, when I do buy things, to make sure that the company is doing the best that it can, just for the environment, but also for its workers, which will make them more resilient to the kinds of economic hardships that they might face in their country or locally with climate change. So those are, I buy local, I buy organic, you know, there's a whole slew of things that we all kind of do. We don't use plastic bags in our house anymore. We do use our own bags, or you just have to carry stuff out of the grocery store by your hands. And these are habits. Apparently, if you can keep doing something for a month, you can turn it into a habit. So sometimes it's just saying, I'm just going to do this this week and next week and for the month. And then before you know it, you'll actually have a slightly more sustainable lifestyle.
And that's Dr. Catherine O'Reilly, an associate professor of geology at Illinois State University. I'm Brianna Grow.
You can read more about last week's climate change forum held at the Normal First United Methodist Church right now on WGLT.org.